essentially, what is Amalek? What are the characteristics that define Amalek and that differentiate Amalek from other Rishonim? Differentiate Amalek from other Rishonim. In our system, the others, we study not only Tzitzis, but we study Rishis too. So it's important to know and to understand precisely what evil is, what Rishis is, because we maintain that in order to know what the good is, a person must also know what evil is. And it's a principle of Plato, but it's a principle of Yadis as well. So what I want to do is spend a little time uncovering the Megillah. And I think that if we do it properly, we'll be able to come out with an understanding of what exactly Amalek is and what differentiates Amalek from other Yeshua, other evil people. In other words, what's the difference, for instance, between Haman and Paro? Okay, Paro was a Russian, but Paro was not Amalek. So apparently, if Paro differentiates between the two, there must be a difference. What is the difference between these two individuals, between these two people? Okay. And what they exemplify. Right. There's a few questions I would ask on the Starfish situation on the Megillah. Okay. You know, the essence of the Megillah really opens up in the last part, the Chazal, that opens up the whole Megillah, is on the Pasuk of Moro, Kocha Amai Vialeah, which I spoke about before. That Chazal say, Rashi explains that it's Gemara Megillah. That Moro al Kocha. So Rashi says it's in Esther 9:26. Teshlepa. Yeah. Moro al Kocha my Gialeh. It says, Mara Hashverosh and Ishtamish Bekoy HaKodesh. What did Hashverosh see that he used the Kelim of the base of Higdash? And more Gialehem. So, Bosatun Vaka Benin Vargas Vashti. And Sutton came and caused him to kill Vashti. So, we explain this. That it's interesting that he used the Kelim of the base of Higdash. And that's a premise in Yadis. A premise in Yadis is that the Rishoyim really recognize Torah on some unconscious level. And that's why Achashverosh really used the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, because he wanted to demonstrate to himself and to others that there's no such thing as the ideals of Torah. So these holy Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash can be used by myself for my own personal pleasure, my own enjoyment, which is really Me'ilah Be'Hekdesh. That's the idea of moral Be'Hekdesh, and he's used for my own personal enjoyment, and nothing's going to happen to me. So it's a victory in the Rosh's mind over the idealism of the Torah. That's what it is. And I wrote a proof for this from the fact that the Arch of Titus in Rome, what does it show? It shows the Jews carrying the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. The slaves carrying the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Yes,
that's what I said. Anyways, Richard? Yeah, okay. That's a real question. Anyway, so it shows you that the Russia recognizes the Beis HaMikdash. Titus the Russia recognizes the Beis HaMikdash. And in the Arch of Triumph, what is the triumph really? The triumph is over the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Every Russia recognizes that. So that is so. And that's so with regard to Achashverosh. But then the question is, so what's the difference really between Achashverosh and Haman? Haman also was a person that every Russia recognizes. Amalek is an individual that essentially recognizes Yadus in a distorted way. There's some kind of distorted recognition. And the Rishay Olam, on some unconscious level, recognize Torah and attempt to prove that it's false and that they can be victorious over it. Achashverosh also does that. But there's a difference, and somehow there's a difference between Achashverosh and between Haman. Achashverosh was a Russia and Haman was a Russia. There's a difference between the two of them. What precisely is the difference? Okay. Yeah. So we explained that the Moedi Aleihem was that it showed it was a Musa Hafka that showed that what happens to an individual like Achashverosh, who is a total hedonist, and he wants that his hedonistic tendencies should be victorious over the idealism of Torah. So what happened was that such a philosophy knows no limit. So then he wanted to use Vashti for his own personal, his own egoistic and sensual satisfactions. But she didn't want to go along with it. So that's why he had to kill her. So basically what it showed was that the life of the hedonist is one in which if a person is involved in that kind of way of life, it's endless, basically. There's no restrictions. Until a person reaches a point where he oversteps his bound, and then he meets destruction. Okay, which was personal destruction for him when Vashti was killed. Okay. Now, let's take a look at... Haman, of course, Haman was something different. Haman was an egoistic problem. Problem of his ego. So, Maro, Haman, Shemeshkani, and Mordechai. No idea, Elof, Shetola, Osu, as Bona Valens. So, it means that by Haman... Haman had it would seem everything, but one individual he couldn't tolerate. Couldn't tolerate and mortified. One person, the whole thing of Chevrolet, one individual he couldn't tolerate, and because of that, he destroyed himself. Because of one person, he destroyed himself. It's interesting, by the way, that there's no limit to the egomania, and this egotistical individual was eventually had to cause his own destruction. But it's interesting with regard to that, because there are two places, it says like this, it says that, it's an Esther Gimel. It's an Esther Gimel. If you want him to follow along, it's up to you. It's an Esther Gimel. After these things, Achashverosh raised the position of Haman, and he placed his position above that of all the other officers. And then it says,
his position above that of all the other officers. And then it says, "V'chol avdei haMelech asher b'shar haMelech kor meshachem l'Haman, u'Mordechai lo yichrav al yichrav." So he wouldn't go there. So that was. Then it says that they brought this news to. They asked Mordechai, "Every day my daughter tov as mitzvahs haMelech. Why do you violate the king's dictates his law, his rule?" So it says they kept telling him every day. And then they brought the news to Haman to see, Liros Hayam de Divrei Mordechai, Ki Yilam HaShohiyu. Okay. Right to understand why, he said, the Gemara says, why didn't Mordechai really bow down to Haman? And the Gemara says, can't you know you? Was he a rebellious guy? You want to do it? So the Gemara says, the Chazal say that there are two Chazal. One Chazal say that because there was something, some of Avodah Zarah on his chest, and the other Chazal say that he himself was Avodah Zarah. All right, we'll see. These are both based on the same idea. But it says that so Haman saw that Mordechai is not korei mishtachel alo. So this is why you mali Haman chema. So then he became very angry. And then vayivas beinav l'shloch yad Mordechai levado to give us Mordechai. So he made a decree against all the Jews because he saw it wasn't just Mordechai but it was a whole nation like that. It's interesting. Later again, he got upset again because it says. After he was invited to the Suda of Esther, so he was very excited. And then it says that he, when he saw, by ate somebody almost never told life, he was very happy that day. And then when he saw Mordechai, Velokumbalos Omimeno, so again it says, Aimele Homan Mordechai Chema. Okay. So then he came home and he said, "Call Zayin and Shovali." And then they suggested Zeresh Ishto and Kolov suggested they should make an eitz and they should hang Mordechai up immediately tomorrow. Don't wait. So basically, that's the That's the second. Is there any question there? Yeah. What was first question? I guess first question is what is the avodah zarah hum? That's first question. What was the avodah zarah? What kind of work? What was the concept of humming having an avodah zarah? Sounds fun. I mean, avodah zarah on his chest. But he was the avodah zarah. What does it mean? What does Chazal mean when they say that? I mean, it's not just Chazal. It's a question of why Mordechai Rahu wasn't Korea and Mishtafala. It doesn't seem to me that in Hilchas Avodah Zarah that there would be a violation if a person would bow down to Hashem. I mean, he's not bowing down to the idol, bowing down to the person. You say, oh, I got Rahu, he's bowing down. I mean, it doesn't seem like what Chazal was saying would satisfy the requirements of Hilchas Avodah Zarah. Hilchas Avodah Zarah, you must have an Avodah Zarah that they worship, and you must bow down to that Avodah Zarah. Over here, they weren't bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, bowing down to Haman. So if you say, what?
So, that wouldn't bother him.
Well, but the point is, okay, but whatever it is, you know, it must be derech avoda. It has to be, this is not an avoda. This is not, he happens to have an avoda on his chest, so what? But he's not bound down to the avoda. People are bound down to him. It's not the derech avoda, so he's not doing it to the avoda zara itself. It's a funny chazal. It sounds like chazal are putting something in there that they're trying to make it into avodah zarah, but it really is. Okay, I'd like to understand that. Second thing is the question of lokum v'lo zman minah. What was different the second time from the first time? We were ready before that. Mordechai was my grandma and Mishtachava. What excited him in the second time? Yeah. There's an interesting medrash. The medrash says, when it says Vayosu Hamelach Estapato Me'al Yodo Vayitno LaHaman, so the Medrash says that also he made a suggestion when he made the suggestion about destroying the Jews. So it says that it says Vayosu Hamelach Estapato Me'al Yodo, that's in Gimel Yud. So the Medrash says that Ramesh Rabba, Rabbanan Amri, Achashverosh Soni is Yisrael Yosem Haman Arash. Medrash says Achashverosh hated the Jews more than Haman Arash. Why? This says Minhag Shalom Lakeach Nosei Neiravon Lamocha. The person wants to purchase something, so what he does is he gives, in order to assure the seller of his credit, so he gives him something, an erevon. Over here it's the converse, that the melech is giving him an erevon. He should be giving the melech. So the medrash says, whatever the limit is, not actually a particular limit, but the medrash says that Achashverosh hated the Jews was a greater Sony Israel than Haman. Sounds preposterous. Because in fact, you see, Achashverosh was good to the Jews later. Good to the Jews later. I can say he hates the Jews more than Haman. Doesn't it's not all of us. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Then, of course, the question we raised before, what's the difference between Achashverosh and Mishtamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash is also the same type of rishis. Same type of hatred, a sinner for Yadus, which is based on it's a sinner for the ideology of Yadus. What does it mean? What does it mean, Mishkamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash? So you tell me that Achashverosh was simply a hedonist. But he wasn't just a hedonist, because you see that he had a sinner for the ideology of Yadus, because he's Mishtamish with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's just like Haman also. What's the difference? It's interesting, because Chazal say that when Haman wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael, so what does it say? It says over there, Ki Gidlo Es Am Mordechai. Ki Gidlo Es Am Mordechai. So, so Chazal say, who is Am Mordechai? Chazal say, it's Rabbanan. Rabbanan. It means the Chachamim. So what does it mean, the Chachamim? Because it means that hatred is an ideological hatred. That's what it means. So the hatred always is directed against the Torah itself. That's why you see that striker, Machshamal, the story of the striker, the story for the Nazis. You take a look at his book, and what does he show? He shows the rabbi teaching Talmud. Whatever shachas for this, but the hatred is always against the Chacham. Always. Sin as Israel is always against the Chacham. Yeah. Okay. So another question I would ask, and that is that the so another question is, after Balal would never shnas and alchay, this question you might not agree with me on. That is that it's said in the Megillah, so probably one of the most well-known parts of the Megillah is where Haman comes to Ahasuerus at night time and he makes the suggestion that he makes it miyachbots are not losses for us with many. So he makes things, he thinks that Ahasuerus was asked what she do for a person as loyal to the king. So he thought it to himself, so he says, well, me, Yachbots, Melech Latzah, Shikar Yosef, and many. He thought that he means him. So he made a very lavish suggestion. He extended himself. And he said that, okay, so he wanted to even give him the Keser Malchus. Of course, later he says like this. Yerashi mentions later he says like this. The Nasan, he saw that Ahasuerus wasn't too happy about the Keser part, so he took that back. He took that back. So it went too far. But then Ahasuerus told the Haman, So it would seem at this point that the fact that he mentioned, he says, Vaseichin Lamordechai HaYehudi, that it was he was really trying to hurt him. He knew very well. He knew who Mordechai was. Mordechai and Haman were very prominent people in the Malchus. The most prominent people in the Malchus. As a matter of fact, Chazal say, when he made the Suda, Lasos Kirtzon Ish Vo'ish. So what did Chazal say? Ish Vo'ish. Who are these two people, Ish Vo'ish? Mordechai and Haman. They're the most prominent people. No reason to say Mordechai Yehudi. So obviously Ahasuerus was trying to hurt Haman by that statement. But then later, of course, he did it. He went and he did it. And then he came home. He came home and it says, Haman nidchap al beso ovo v'chafuiro. All right, he was completely distraught, mortified. So it says, then they told him, they said, in Mizera Yehudim Mordechai shechalos l'umpolachon of l'suchalo, ki nafol tipolachon. Okay, so the same ones that in the previous parak said that just told him Yasuwait Gavoa Hamisha Mamo, just told him before Yasuwait, what's the matter? Mamo said over here that in Mizera, Yehuda Mordechai Shechalos Lumpolachon Lasuchal Lokinachal Tipolachon, what happened so quickly? So he explained that the idea is that the behind the Megillah lets you an interesting insight into anti-Semitism. At first they said that make it eight Kavachim Yishmama and hang Mordechai. Then when they saw that he wasn't successful, they saw the beginning of his downfall, so they said, no, now if he's a Jew, if he's Ari Udim, then Nafal Kippa Lafana, you're going to fall completely. What happened short while before, they didn't know who was from Zerah Yehudim. They didn't know he was Jewish. What was the sudden change? So we said last time that what the Megillah shows is that behind the anti-Semitism is an unbelievable fear. There's a tremendous fear of the Jew. And you see this in the fact that the anti-Semites always say, she was involved in a universal conspiracy, and that the Jew is pictured as a person who is like a devil, has long tentacles all over the earth, and certain sinister powers are attributed to him. Mystical sinister powers are attributed to the Jew. What does it show? It shows you an unbelievable unconscious fear of the Jew. And that's why when the Jew is down, is downtrodden, that fear is gone. That alleviates the fear. But the moment he starts to rise, then the fear takes over. And then the Rishayim are lost. Then it's like it becomes like by Yeshua ben Nun, what Rachav Azona said. And people with envy, they didn't have any koach to even speak. The Yafik Russian of the Pasuk over there, the way she describes the fear of the Jew. Behind the anti-Semitism is an unbelievable fear. And that's what's expressed over there. The first one, the Jews were down, so then she said destroy them. But the moment they see the Jews starting to rise, then the fear comes out. So that's in Miseri. But I'd like to understand what the downfall was. What was the downfall? So what? I mean, so you tell me, of course, it's a terrible thing. Here, Haman hated Mordechai, and now he has to go, and he has to give him covered Malchus. Yeah, I understand that personally. That was a tremendous blow to him. But why does it signify the beginning of a downfall, of a total downfall? Because basically at that point, what did you have? The edict of the king was intact, which means to say that the Jews were going to be destroyed in several months' time. So what happened? So now Ahasuerus happened to feel that he must show some debt of gratitude to Mordechai. So he used Haman. So why is that the beginning of the downfall? So you're telling me on an emotional level was the biggest downfall. Yeah, it's true on an emotional level. But Haman wasn't just a regular emotional person. It'd be wrong if you just assessed him as a completely emotional individual. He was an individual that had complete control over himself, in his life. He was able to. He was a very intelligent person. He was able to bring about something which was preposterous because of his abilities of leadership. And he was a strong person. He was a politically minded individual, very intelligent, politically minded individual. So what if Ahasuerus wants to honor one Jew? So what? You're going to destroy all the Jews soon and get him later? Things change. You know Ahasuerus, he changes one day like this, one day like that. So why was this the beginning of the downfall? That's what I want to understand. To me, it seems there has to be something more here than just the fact that emotionally he hated Mordechai. Okay? Something more. Because here they saw that right now is the beginning of the end. Why isn't it the beginning of the end at that point? Okay. There's one more question. What is? The question is really, and there's something that has to be clarified, and that is that when Esther finally, of course, Esther used her unbelievable ingenuity, and she used a psychological principle in order to ensnare Haman. And that was that she made two mishnahs. The first mishnah, she didn't tell Ahasuerus what she had on her mind. So therefore, and she just was Haman, something with Haman, he didn't know what it was. But because of that, he started to fantasize. So she knew that the imagination is more powerful than reality. She knew that if she just came over to Ahasuerus, she just told him exactly what she thought, it would never have the effect of allowing his mind to start imagining things about Haman. So apparently it's clear that something was going on already before. In order for Ahasuerus to start thinking, the Medrash says he had a dream, he saw Haman at his throat with a knife. And he thought that Haman's taking off with Esther. He said, what's going on? Something is going on. Esther Amalka knew that with a deep insight into psychology, she knew that it's much more potent to use the imagination. Imagination is a much more powerful tool than reality. So she let him imagine. And that's why it was Noda Darshnas HaMelech, and he started to think about various different things. But then in the second mishnah, he was primed. So Balailah, who's Ad Dashnas HaMelech, really primed him for the second mishnah. And what happened in the second mishnah? In the second mishnah was where Esther revealed exactly what it was. And then Haman was caught, and he was, in the eyes of the king, he was considered the most evil individual, and his fate was sealed. Okay. His fate was sealed. But the Megillah doesn't tell us why exactly his fate was sealed. It's interesting. What exactly was his crime? The crime that Haman supposedly committed is not really stated in the Megillah. So why did Ahasuerus actually, what did he think that when he wanted to kill Haman, that Haman wanted to do? What was the terrible crime that he was supposed to be executed for? Okay. That's missing in the Megillah. That's missing in the Megillah. Yes. You know the way to explain it. Means that he wants to take over the Malchus, because that's the sign of taking over the Malchus, is capturing the queen. There's no question about that. But what was the indication? What indicated that? That sealed his fate. He made one subtle mistake over there. He made a mistake that he was completely overcome, and he jumped on the bed with Esther. That was bad. Showed to his Achashverosh's mind that there's something, he overwent the bounds of a queen. You don't do that to a queen. But he was so, at that point, he was emotionally so far gone that he forgot about propriety. But Achashverosh was still in the real world. He took a look at this for him, and this was an impossible action. So that sealed his fate forever. Okay. So that was basically the second time that Haman really made a subtle error. First time was with the Keser Malchus. He went too far, Keser Malchus, which Ahasuerus probably didn't forget. And the second time was with the queen when he fell on the bed with the queen. That was the second time. That was the final one. Yeah. Okay, but what a wonder. It wasn't just an economical blunder. Marx maintains that everything goes, the history goes back in us. We hold it goes by a different horse. The ego is a much more powerful horse. Yes.
You never heard stood between Ahasuerus and Esther, or something which was really like, you know, it did Malchus or did it in his own personal satisfaction. That's what it really threw up. Like, initially, when he sat down and drank after he gave him the drink.
It didn't do him any good, but that was still one of the factors. A person's fate is sealed emotionally by another individual, never by one factor, but by many. But there has to be one predominant idea that causes destruction. There are other accessory ideas. Yes. The psuk, where it says, the question of what was the Avodah Zarah? That was the original question. What was the Avodah Zarah? Why was Haman considered an official Avodah Zarah? Right? Yeah. You see, it says in the Pasuk, it says that what's strange about this Pasuk? Ayam Avdei HaMelech HaShem B'Sharah, he says, Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachra. Okay, he didn't kneel and didn't bow. Vayomer Avdei HaMelech Asher B'Sharah HaMelech LeMordechai, Madu Ato Over His Mitzvah HaMelech. Ask him a question. Found an answer. Vayi Kam Ramelech Yom Vayom, every day they would tell him, Velo Shama Alayim, he didn't listen to them. Vayagidu Lo Haman, they told Haman, Liros, to see, Hayam Du Divrei Mordechai, Ki Higit Lohem Asher Hu Yehudi. What has to be explained in this passage? What is Divrei Mordechai? It says, Hayam du Divrei. It's not Divrei Mordechai. Didn't say anything. You see, he didn't say anything. And ki higit lahem ashehu Yehudi. So what's got to do with being a Yehudi? So what? What's got to do with, this was before any kind of a decree. Nothing happened yet. So what was the fact that he was a Yehudi? Okay. So what I want to say is like this. That in the sin of Amalek, there is a quality that's not to be found in any other kind of sinner. You see, in the sin of a molech, there's something unusual there. The Torah singles out Machias Amolek. So Yod al Teskor, Mechomolot Hashem ba Amolek Dor Midor Dor. So it means, and the, and somebody asked me a question, Rose asked a question, is, what does it say that the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Ki Mocho Emcha Esvecha Amolek, but the question is not a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Moch, it's Tzal Yisrael's Moch. But it means to say, Ki Mocho Emcha Esvecha Amolek, it means to say that the knowledge of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, insofar as humanly possible, demands that a person destroys Amalek. It's because of the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Amalek is destroyed. Machal Emchan means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys Amalek, not just through the Ashgach, of course, Ashgach Kal Yisrael, but it means that essentially, Machal Emchan Zecha Amalek means any HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the cause of the destruction of Amalek, because attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu means by definition that you have to hate Amalek and destroy Amalek. So what is this quality? What is this quality in Amalek, a special quality in Amalek? What I want to say is that the quality in Amalek is that Amalek is not just a hatred, but Amalek is an ideology. Amalek is an ideology. It's different than any other sin. See, there are people that hate the Jews, but they hate the Jews on an emotional plane. It's an emotional plane. That's a Russian. It's an evil person. Para, evil person. But the Amalek is different. The Amalek is a person that is a person that represents what the world would call high standards. High standards. It's a person that endorses qualities such as courage, commitment, ideology, selflessness. It's a whole philosophy and a system and a way of life, Amalek. Amalek is not just base hatred, not just base hatred. You see, when Haman set himself up, that's what Chazal means when they say it wasn't Avodah Zarah. It wasn't Hilchas Avodah Zarah. It wasn't Hilchas Avodah Zarah. It means to say that Haman was setting himself up. The cover that Haman was getting was because of the fact that he was setting himself up as the leader of an ideological movement. It was his ideology, his way of life. And the cover that he was getting was not just for Haman as a person, but for Haman insofar as his ideology is concerned. That's why Mordechai could not be Korea Mishnah. That's what the pasuk. Pasuk is like, Madua vayihi kamar lavyon vayon vashlom alehem, vayagidu lohom al liros hayam du divrei Mordechai, ki higid lohem ashehu yehigid. Because when they asked Mordechai, why don't you bow down? So like Chazal say, Mordechai wasn't a kantron. He wasn't a kantron. He wasn't just rebellious. But he explained to them that you're not bowing down to the person of Haman, that's a respected official by the king. You're bowing down to an ideology. And I'm a Jew, and I can't bow down. I can't respect that ideology. That's key. He didn't know how much that would be. Okay? It's interesting. There's a Taisvis that says a similar kind of a concept in Suez. As the Gemara says in Ksubis, Umole no duo, ilmole no duo, lachananya misho vazaya, avapolchu lechon. Gemara is in Ksubis, that's what I'm doing on a base. Gemara says, they would have tortured Hananya misho vazaya, so they would have bowed down to the Tzelem. So Taisva says to Kash, Taisva says, I don't understand, he says. Tema, he says. How could the Gemara say such a thing? Because you see, Rabbi Akiva said, all my life I was mitzvah in this pasuk. When can I fulfill this pasuk? When they tortured, he says, Mashma de b'chol nafshecha, is even if they torture a person, Rachmal Atzlan, be certain caution, just like Rabbi Akiva, that they rake the skin with the cones of the steel. He says, comes along, b'chol shkeng l'negudim. Certainly, if they just give him malchus, they physically torture him. Negudim means they just whip him. So then, certainly, he shouldn't give in. So I'm Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says the Oso Tzelem Lo Hayav Odes Kachod Mamish. It wasn't a real idol that they didn't bow, that they refused to bow down to. He says Elohaya Osi Lechvod Hamelach. It was made for the honor of the king. What does it mean? It means it represented a certain way of life of the king was a kind of philosophy and ideology. You see? So he says, "Afal pikein hayabo kiddush Hashem." He says, even though halachically it wasn't avodah zarah, it was a kiddush Hashem that they refrained from bowing down because of the fact that it represented a certain way of life, this idol. See, the Rambam says a tzelem, well, what is the word tzelem? The word tzelem, why do they call the avodah zarah tzelem? And we say the tzelem elokim. So it sounds like the word tzelem is being used in two different ways. But the Rambam explains very easily, because tzelem means something that has an idea behind it. So when the people worship the avodah zarah, it represents a certain, there's an idea behind the avodah zarah. It's only a fool that worships the actual thing that's made out of sticks and stones. But the people who endorse the avodah zarah, the leaders of the avodah zarah, they use it to reflect a certain idea, a corrupt idea, but it's an idea behind it. So actually, that's what it means over here. It means that tzelem that he set up, that Nebuchadnezzar set up, was really to reflect a certain idea. It wasn't true avodah zarah. It was paying homage to a certain derech hachayim. And Hananya Mishael Vazayah refused to do it, even though halachically it wasn't avodah zarah, but philosophically it was avodah zarah, so it was a kiddush Hashem, so they refused. And that's the exact same thing that Mordechai did in Shushan HaBira, when he refused Madua Ta'over Eis Mitzvah Samelech. So it says, Vayihi Kamalot Yom Vayom, Niras Hayam Dure Gidlon Vayas Hayam the Divrei Mordechai, Yihi Gidlohem Masherhu Yehudi. So then he said, I'm a Jew and I can't endorse. You're not just bowing down to me, you're bowing down to a Derech HaChaim. I have a different Derech HaChaim. It goes against my Derech HaChaim, and I refuse to acknowledge this Derech HaChaim. That's why Mordechai was not Koreo Mishtachar. Okay? That's why it follows. It says, Vayivis Bein of Lashloch Yav Mordechai Levado, Kigidlos Am Mordechai. What does Am Mordechai mean? The Chachomim, the Chachmei Yisrael. Because he saw right away where the trouble starts from. It starts from the philosophy and the ideology of Yadus. So because of that, he was filled with a hate, an immense hatred for the ideology, which is completely opposite of his ideology. You see? And that's why the BK Shlahashmi, that's called Yehudim Sheva Cholmachas HaShvar Jamar. That was the source. That was the root of his anti-Semitism, which is the root of the anti-Semitism of Amalek. Amalek can't tolerate the ideology of Yadus, and it especially can't tolerate seeing this ideology exist in a nation, socially, in a social setting, that there's a nation that reflects God's ideology. That's what they can't tolerate. And that's why they always must, in their mind, they must wipe out that nation. Okay?
What exactly is
that? Greatness of man, but not universal man. It's not on a universal level, but it's on a particularized level. In other words, you had the door, you had Dora Flug. Dora Flug also believes in the greatness of man. The tower, the archaeology, the godless Adam, and you don't need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That was a denial of God. But that was on a universal level for all of man. But on Amalek, it's looking for social superiority of its own nation. And it's looking to engage itself in the aim of Amalek, and the objective of Amalek is really to constantly gain pleasure out of reflecting upon their own superiority as a nation. That's the ideology of Amalek. Amalek is looking for the enjoyment of involving oneself in an appreciation, the enjoyment of appreciating their own grandeur. That's what Amalek is, which is exactly the opposite of Yadus, which Yadus maintains that a person's highest level is when he recognizes how small he is. When he recognizes how absolutely, infinitesimally small he is. Exactly the opposite ideology. And Haman reflected the ideology of Amalek. And that's why Mordechai could not be a Koreo Mishtachar. Yes? The difference between a Molech and between a Russia, Stama Russia, of course, the question is, we raised before, But Achashverosh also hated the ideology of Yadus, because you see from the Kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, he hated him too. As a matter of fact, it says his hatred to the Jews was greater than Haman's. We mentioned before the Chazal. So what's the answer? The answer is, there's a difference. The difference is that in Haman, the hatred of the Jew becomes a part of his whole philosophy. It becomes a system, systematized logically with universals, and it becomes a whole philosophy and a whole system of thinking. That's why you can see it very simply by Hitler, Machina, the Nazis. It was Goebbels, was the philosopher, Stryker the historian, and the hatred of the Jew wasn't simply a hatred, but it became a whole, a whole type of theoretical, it was on a theoretical plane to say the Jew is evil because he comes from a certain type of, a certain source, a different source than other people. He's naturally evil. The whole system with their history and their all their ideas, I mean, you know very well, the philosophy, it's genetic, the whole racial, the whole system. It becomes, they work on it, and it becomes a whole theoretical belief system. It's a theoretical belief system. That characterizes Amalek. The Russian never reaches that level. See, Achashverosh hated the Beis HaMikdash, the Kelim. He didn't want to be restricted because he was a hedonist. But he didn't go any further. That's it. You see, it's a hatred towards the Jew. But when the hatred towards the Jew, when the mind, in other words, in one word, Amalek is a person who, or people, who are involved with their mind, you see, with the Koach HaMachshava, to create a false and distorted system against the Jew. That's Amalek. That's why Amalek is really evil. Why? Because when can man really be evil? Only when he functions truly as man on the highest level. And what element is the highest element in man? His mind. His mind. Amalek is where the mind is used to create a whole philosophy against Torah, a whole systematic philosophy against Torah. Distorted. The evil is evil in machshava and thought. That's what Amalek is. Another Russia never reaches that level. Achashverosh sure hated the Jews. As a matter of fact, that's what the Medrash says. He hated the Jews worse than Haman. So how is it possible if he hated Jews worse than Haman that he wasn't so bad after all? What's the answer? The answer is it never reached the ideological plane. It was just an emotion. Yes, his emotion was greater. He even hated them at that point. His emotional hatred was greater than Haman's. An emotional hatred. But in Haman, it wasn't just an emotional hatred. In Haman, it was a thought-out system, a philosophical system, a thought-out system. That is the character, that's the unique quality of Amalek. Amalek is evil, but not just evil, but evil with the mind. That's why, you see, yes.
Why is the philosophy of Amalek based
on it? That's a lot to show that it was just haphazard. Things just work haphazardly, and man is the one that controls everything. He's the one that's in control. He's the one that should be deified. The deification of man, but not universal man. Universal man, that's dark water. It's particular man, a particular group of people that are intent on having themselves deified. That was Haman. That's what Haman represents.
It's akin to what the way the Rambam explains, you know, Biro is worse than Meister.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Because you're using the higher elements. It's the highest element of man being used for a totally evil plot, a distorted view of reality, creating a distorted philosophy. That's the essence of Amalek. That's why by Amalek, yes. And Mordechai, really, why did he do that to Shaul HaMelech? Because he was hoping that there would be others that would join him. No doubt about it. Because that's what he told them. He explained to them that this isn't Haman that you're respecting. You're respecting an ideology. But that ideology is false. That's a distorted, corrupt ideology. So what he was hoping offhand on the team was that others should join him. But no, they kept on saying, I'm going to yom yom, I'm going to show my way. And he didn't get any followers, didn't get any supporters. So then they finally reported to Haman. You see, what do you mean, Hayam du Dubei Mordechai? But they saw he is taking a certain position. His position. Let's see which position is going to prevail. Okay? There was a philosophy. It was one position against another position. That's what happened. Okay, but he wanted. He was protesting. He was a courageous person. He wouldn't just let it go. He wouldn't just go high. He was hoping that he could overthrow him, do something against him to stop him. With Mordechai, but they saw he is taking a certain position. His position. Let's see which position is going to prevail. Okay, there was a philosophy. It was one position against another position. That's what happened. Okay, but he wanted. He was protesting. He was a courageous person. He wouldn't just let it go. He wouldn't just go high. He was hoping that he could overthrow him, do something against him, to stop him.
But it's based on the definition of unwilling to
fight. Comes an ideology. What does it mean, an ideology? It means to say, you see, like Hitler, Yimach Shemo, that even though the Nazis were losing the war, but still, and they're taking away from their war effort, in order to destroy people, to destroy Jews, that won't stop them. Why? Because it's an ideology. An ideology.
The left
passenger
from the
bucket
of the
German people,
the thing
of the war against the Jews. The war against Jews. That's what he said. So that's a moment. That's the whole system and a commitment. A commitment. I mean, the Amalek has, you see, you have to understand, why was Hitler successful? Why was Hitler so successful? How could a person that was such riches, the world looks back now and askance, and that was impossible. They themselves, the German Rishayim today, themselves look back and they can't imagine what happened to them. What's the answer? The answer is because Hitler was successful because he was standing on the platform, he was presenting a platform of an ideal. See, you can't reach people with just hatred. Hatred, you can have a few minority groups that have a hatred towards a Jew. That's a low. But to reach people, you have to have an ideal. Hitler was a person that was not a materialistic person, an idealistic person. He wouldn't eat anything more than his troops ate on the field. He was self-sacrificing. He was committed. He was a person that reflected the ideals of commitment, devotion, selflessness. You see, an ideal, it represented an ideal. The only person that can really do evil is a person that represents ideals to human beings. A person that's just on the lower level, just hatred, it's not hatred. Yeah, he's evil. He's evil. But he can never have an effect. In order to have an effect on people, to really accomplish riches, you must work and appear to have the virtues that every society recognizes. Courage, all the virtues. You look back and you read this, you'll see. He was a person, the Nazis were people, and the Yimach Shemo, that they invoked the ideals of humanity. Courage, selflessness, commitment, all the qualities that people look up to were actually taken and made as part of the system. That's why he was successful. That's how a Moloch is successful. See, that's the difference between a Moloch and between a Russian. Difference between a Moloch and between Paro. Paro enslaved the Jews. He hated them and he enslaved them. But that was a hatred of the Russian. But to destroy them, you see, to go out of your way to destroy them, where it costs money. It costs money to destroy people. What did Bohemond say? It costs money to destroy people. So to make it into an ideal and a philosophy and a way of life and something that demands commitment to. It uses all the virtues that people respect are being used in such a type of a system. That is a Moloch. That is Rishus. That's Lasos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish by the Mishnah. So what do Chazal say? Who are those two Ish? Who are those two Ishim? Who are those two people? Mordechai and Haman. That means that way back in the beginning of the Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Achashverosh, Achashverosh already saw that he has two people that reflect, that in his mind reflected ideals. They were Mordechai and Haman. He didn't know the difference between the two, but he saw these are just not stump people. Mordechai is not a stump person. something else is moving in, and Haman's not stam a person. To him, they appeal to be the same, because they reflected in his mind certain virtues. A certain, see, Amalek really represents himself as a noble individual. He represents, he endorses, he's a noble person. Respectable, a respectable individual. Meekness is not respectable. Amalek is respectable. He uses those qualities. That's the mark of Amalek. Wherever you see an ideology, you should know that's Amalek. That's why PLO is an ideology. It is Amalek. And the more clever the person is, the more dangerous he is, of course, and the more of Amalek he is. And you see, of Buchanan, the way he tries to disguise his hatred towards the Jew with arguments that are good arguments. That's a man that's thinking in ideological terms. He is a very dangerous individual. That's Amalek. That reflects Amalek. And listen carefully, you see. As a matter of fact, Buchanan, if you listen carefully, reflects Hitler. Same type of... I'm sure he's studying. There's no question about it. It's a lot of statements he makes. It's very similar. Yes? He wants to talk about Hitler. So why wouldn't I say that power is worse Russia than Haman? I would say that that Haman is worse, Rashi Amalek is worse, but the reason why Paro lost his Bechira was because of the situation. See, the Rambam says that his loss of Bechira was as if God took away a faculty of, God takes away a faculty of a certain person, like takes away his eyesight or his ability to hear or whatever, faculty. But the only reason why was because why God intervened in that manner and took away that faculty was because he reached a certain level of rishus, which Haman also reached, but there was no reason to do it. Haman's bechira, it's interesting. Haman's bechira was intervened with. Where was it intervened with, Haman's bechira? It was intervened with. Where? Because it says when he came home after the downfall, it says, And then they told him, what happened? It says, so we say, wasn't it Odom Medabrim Imo? See, Haman was a very clever person. So at that point, when he saw he's going to lose, he could have changed his whole policy, a new policy, and he might have been able to save himself. And you give him a chance. Odom Medabrim Imo, so we say, and they pulled him away. So he didn't get a chance to change his approach. He didn't give him a chance. They took away the thing with his ability to change this. But anyway, yes. Anti-Semitism. They don't understand. That's a shallow way of dealing with it. It's not scapegoat. It has nothing to do with that, as a matter of fact. It really is in a direct intent to destroy the Jew, and it has nothing to do with it. It's a cover-up. That's not what it is. It's not scapegoat. Okay.
Definitely universal man. Like in saying that man is great. Nothing to anybody. Like universal man. There's not a specific group. Not the same group. There are a dozen on the contrary. They don't have any competition. The Amora derives from competition. Now he's superior to others. That's his whole essence. Okay? That's why it's Kyoto case called. Because it means to say that Amalek is the opposite ideology. See, other Rishayim is not Mokhamim Midor Dor, because it never reaches the level, the high level. It never reaches cerebral level. It never becomes involved in mind. So the other Rishayim that are not involved in mind, it's not a Mokhamim Midor Dor. I mean, they fail. But Amalek is Mokhamim Kiyoto Keis Kor. It reaches up to the Kisei HaKavah. What does it mean? It means because of the fact that it uses Chachma, it uses the intellect, it uses universals to describe the rishis. The rishis is framed in universals. You see, what do you see, by the way, that Haman was a man that used universals? It would be to describe the rishis. The rishis is framed in universals. You see, what do you see, by the way, that Haman was a man that used universals? In the beginning of the man, Hayama Mumuchan. He thought universally. Because it wasn't just Lo'ala Melech Levado of Savashti Amalka. This is a universal. So immediately implemented another counter universal.
You see, he was a person that thought in universal terms. He thought in universal terms. And if you read, ever read Mein Kampf, Hitler's book, Yimach Shemo, you read his book, you'll see that he speaks in universal terms. Universal terms. That's the ultimate Russia. Represents the ultimate Russia. Yes?
The thing is that Hitler hated the Jews, the ideology, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews,
the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, They know exactly. Take a look at Stryker. Look at Stryker's book. You think you'll know that? Look at Stryker's book. See? It has nothing. You see, they hate. Let me put it this way. The Jew is not just the ultimate Jew, of course, is the ultimate of the ideology. But there are offshoots of the ideology. There are offshoots. In other words, you see, for instance, there were great thinkers in the last. In the last century, Jewish thinkers, Einstein, Freud, great minds, great kept. Now, where did these people learn how to think from? They weren't. Their parents weren't Talmidei Chachamim. But the approach, the whole approach to thought, to Chachma, was an offshoot of the whole system of Yadus. It was like a byproduct. They're byproducts of the Yadus, too. They're byproducts as well. Not just the whole approach, like, for instance, Bertrand Russell used to say when he went to a meeting, he saw all the aquiline noses in the meetings of mathematicians. So he said, there's something in these people that brings them to the mathematics, the Chochmah. These people weren't involved in Torah, but it's a byproduct of Torah. It's an offshoot of Torah. At the least, they're tied to Chochmah. Something. They're not stam in the Welt, they're stam behemoths. You see? They're high-level people. So they're byproducts. And Russia senses the byproduct. And of course, with a sensor, as he goes all the way back, he knows where it comes from. That's key. Get it. Same thing with Haman. Same thing with Haman. He senses something over here. But then he finds it's really the Chachamim that are really it. He traces it back. Intuitively, he traces it back. The Russia has a good intuition. And he traces it back to its source. And ultimately, the hatred is against the Talmud Chacham and against the Torah. Russia knows where it's at. He knows where it's at. He knows where they are. They're not ignorant. They stand. Doesn't matter where they are. They know in their mind, in the back of their mind, they know where it is. Where the hatred is directed towards. It's directed towards the real Jew. That is the source of hatred. Yes. And then that has to do with the question that Richard raised also. See, there's two, really, what? We asked the question before. So first it says, Madua Tovers Mitzvah Melach. So then it says, Ki Gidla Mashal Yudhi. Vayar Homan Kim Mordechai Prem Shtachavalo. Vayimavle Homan Chema. Right? Then again later, two prakam later, when he was invited to the Mishnah, Vayetze Homan Bayam was Nechotot Way. Echeros Homan is Mordechai Mishar Melach Lokom Velo Zon Menu. You notice over here it doesn't say Vayena Korealo. It says Lokom Velo Zon. Which one was worse, by the way? Zon is worse. Kom is one thing, but Zohar is worse. It means he didn't start, he was not affected. It says, Vayimolei Haman al Mordechai Chema. You know, interesting thing. Before it says Vayimolei Haman Chema. Here it says Vayimolei Haman al Mordechai Chema. Why does it say al Mordechai Chema? What is it show? The answer is that there are two hatreds that Amalek has towards the Jew. One hatred that Amalek has towards the Jew is the ideological hatred. That is the hatred of the ideology that the Jew represents and the fact that the Jew is an embodiment of the philosophy of Yadus. That's one hatred, great hatred. That's the hatred that caused him to want to destroy the Jew from the face of the earth. But the second hatred is a hatred not just against the ideology of the Jew, but against the character of the Jew, the character of the Jew. See, what upset him so much the second time? He already passed the decree, and everybody knew the Jew's going to be destroyed. So you'd think at that point that you'd see some kind of a difference in Mordechai. After all, he knows he hasn't got long to live, and you'd think that he some effect. But when he saw he saw he remains unaffected. That when he walks by, it's as if nobody walked by. Then vayimolei homon al Mordechai chema. It was the character of the Jew that they hate. That he couldn't tell. What was that? Was all thing? What was the eighth gavur? What did the eighth gavur? How did that satisfy him? How did that satisfy him? What does the eighth gavur? What do you have to kill him tomorrow? Why kill him tomorrow? What does the eighth gavur make him? It bothers him. So it bothers him. So what's the eighth gavur? The answer is the eighth gavur is that's the last recourse that they have. They want to say, we'll see how ineffective the Jew is when we hang him, when we kill him. Then we'll see how ineffective. That's why he was so mad at Tobay, because he's so happy about that. That's why it satisfied that egomania against the particular character of the Jew. There's two hatreds that Amora has, the ideology and the character of the Jew. Because the Jew represents the ultimate in courage. The ultimate in courage is the Jew. Why is the Jew the ultimately courageous person? Because the Jew is the only person in the world that faces reality. And that takes the greatest courage. Okay. Now, in a different way. Now, you see, what was the problem? Now, this is where Esther came in. This is where Esther came in. Because Esther saw what's happening. Esther understood. Esther Mordechai Fleiter, she understood what's going on. And she saw that Haman really, she knew what Haman was, and that Haman is trying to establish a whole new system, a new ideology, with himself as the ideological leader. Okay? He was supposed to be the leader of the movement. So she knew that there must be a person like that. There's got to be a certain amount of friction between him and Ahasuerus, because basically what he was trying to do was make Ahasuerus should be the political leader. Let him run the government. He's a political leader. But the ideological leader would be who? Would be Haman. That's basically what his move was. He was trying to set himself up as the ideological leader of the nation. That's what he tried to do. And that's what Mordechai warned them. Mordechai was warning them that he's not going to bow down to Haman, he's bowing down to an ideology. He's trying to become an ideological leader. So actually, what he wanted to do was to, he wanted to, his, he had an ingenious plan, and it was a very intelligent plan. The plan was that who really leads people? Not the person that has the power over them. The king doesn't really lead people. What leads people is a person that captures their emotions and really captures the inner heart of the people. The ideological leader is the most powerful force, not the economic leader. So he was going to leave Ahasuerus, let him be the economic leader. But I am going to be the ideological leader of the people. That would give him the most power. That was his idea. Now Esther knew that Ahasuerus was no dummy, and Ahasuerus, when it came to himself, he was very, very smart, very clever. When it came to himself, and as he knew, she knew that he knew what's going on, and that there's some kind of a friction here. So that's why she made this first party, where she didn't disclose exactly what she wants to do. She got his imagination going. And then he had a dream. Haman's trying to kill him. Haman's running off the queen. He sensed already what Haman is. One person can read another person's feelings, their unconscious feelings. And he sensed already what Haman's objective was. He said, that's why that night, when he started to think there's something happening, a conspiracy. So he said, a conspiracy, and nobody tells me? So what's happening? I must be doing something wrong. So he opened up the safe as a chronos, and he said, let's see, in order for a king to have loyalty, to deserve loyalty, he has to reward those people who are loyal to him. So he said, that just a minute, Mordechai did something, I'm not rewarding him. So people are learning from this. It doesn't pay to be loyal to the king. He saved his life and he got nothing. So that's why when Haman came in, and by the way, Haman was under the influence of a powerful emotion. The emotion at that moment was to destroy Mordechai, because of the fact that he couldn't tolerate his character, and he came in that night, he came in very late. It was crazy. What is he going on? Hasn't he known another Shnas HaMalach? But the answer is, the Gemara says, Gassin HaMekalkelos HaSashura. It means under the influence of the emotion of the hatred, he lost his whole, his balance, his mental balance, his sense of priority. He figured, I'll go there, I'll see, maybe he's awake, maybe I can get in there. So he went there, and meantime, Ahasuerus already was going through, thinking, yeah, the fears against him. So that's why he said, he knew very well. So what did Ahasuerus say to him? He said, Meir kachas olavush esus kashen yibat vasechein to le Mordechai ha-Yehudi. What does he mean, Mordechai ha-Yehudi? He said, you really aren't doing this. You're not trying to destroy the Jews because of loyalty to me. That'd be one thing. You want to be loyal, the way you presented it was very nice. But I see that this is becoming a whole part of your ideology. So now what happens This is the way. This is the way. This is the way a person leads people. First, he sets up an ideology, but an ideology in the minds of people is a dormant thing. Doesn't have any effect because people aren't thinkers. You must give them something to do in order to act out the following of the ideology. So Ahasuerus saw that Haman is very clever. What he's doing is he's using the anti-Semitism. He's arming the people in order to have him. He is the ideological head. And not only that, but now he's waging a war, a whole campaign against these people, which places him at the head of the whole army, the whole nation, in terms of their almost war. So he's acting out. He's giving the people something to do to actually make them a part of this ideology. Because you can't just with ideas alone, people alone move. You have to get them to move to action. So he's moving them to action, and therefore he is becoming actively. Not potentially, but actually, he's becoming their leader. And they're going around, they're going to kill people at his command. So Ahasuerus, that was Ahasuerus' nightmare. He saw all of a sudden, he saw this person is using his power, his influence, to make himself the head of a whole ideology. And not only that, but this ideology has a campaign and a cause, which he's now involved in performing, which makes it an act of philosophy, which is dangerous. Most dangerous kind. So therefore, he said to him, what does it mean? He says, if you really just worried about me, that's one thing. That's why I want to destroy the Jews. But over here, he says, you're setting yourself up as an ideology. I want you now to break your ideology. I don't want you to be an ideological leader. And what is the best method to demonstrate that the ideology is broken? Where he has to go in the Rehov here and say that Mordechai the Jew is really the great person that the king rewards. So that was Ahasuerus's remedy for the problem of the Haman. What was the remedy? He said to him in simple terms, you want to save my life? That's why I wanted to destroy the Jews, fine. But you're not going to be an ideological leader. And how am I going to break you from that? Very simply. How could you, in front of these people, you're making the anti-Semitism part of your whole ideology, your whole philosophy is anti-Semitism. He says, I'm not going to let you do that. You take Mordechai the Jew, and you're in a contract. Show him respect, show him cover Malchus, because he saved my life. The other Jews who want to kill, fine, kill him. But it can only be done for one purpose, only for me, not for you. You're not going to gain anything out of the destruction of the Jews. You're not going to gain a position through their destruction. That's what Ahasuerus said.
No.
Of course, he said, "Yesh no am echad, mechur the mefar." This is a bad nation. They don't say malachim also. They don't. So fine, we'll destroy them. See? Really, came into the picture. She placed the final. She brought out the final point. What Ahasuerus should already start. See, he raised it. That's why Haman said that. That's why they said that he was. That's why Zeresh Ishto Imizera Yidim Hashachilosa Rimtolafan. That was in the field. It wasn't just a personal thing that he didn't like. That's at a lower level. Haman was on a higher level. Ishvish, but the downfall was. That his whole position as an ideological leader was broken. That's a Shachilosa Limpo the father. That was the devil. Okay. Now what did Esther do? Esther added the final point. The last bit of evidence that was necessary to completely incriminate Haman. And where was that? What was that statement that she said? The statement was where she said she incarnated the army, lahashmid laro gulabi, to be destroyed. The ilu v'la'avodim, ilu la'avodim l'shpachas nimkano hecharashti. If we were sold as avodim l'shpachas, as slaves, as the servants and maidservants, then I would have kept quiet. Because it wouldn't be worthy to serve the king. But what did she mean by that? What did she imply by that? She said she brought the final proof that there was no purpose in what he did to defend the king, but it was an ideology. Because why should he destroy them? Why doesn't he make them avodim u'shvachos? That would be the wrath like Pilate did. Like Pilate did. That's the regular, normal kind of hatred. That's the hatred of the Russian. So that's what she said. He is not really doing this for you. If he was doing this for you in line with your kind of hatred, then it'll be about a mishvachos. You could use the people and gain from them. Gain, make you more wealthy. The labor, tremendous labor force, for nothing, free. But it's lahashmi laragalabi. It means that this is what he is doing is just to try to set himself up as the ideological leader. And therefore, what he wants to do is really subserviate your position eventually, because you're just the economic head, you're just the political leader, and he will be the philosophical leader of the whole country, and he will have the control over the people, entire control. Lashmid Laravalabed is an ideology, that's what he's trying to do. That's when Ahasuerus decided that his state was sealed, except it was sealed with the last thing that sealed it was the mistake that he made was when he fell on the bed. Because that association was, you see, he doesn't have any sense of this being his Malka, and on the contrary, he feels that he can approach her in such a way which breaks down the barrier between him and between her, and that's a gam lichbosh and Malka in the Baboyas. When he saw that, that was the final struggle. That was the final psychological. Correct. Yes, correct. That's good. That's very good. That's right. Agam lichbosh and malchim abayis means that he saw at that moment not just Haman as the ideological leader, but in being totally successful and eventually overthrowing him from his political position and economic position as well. That's correct. That's what he saw. He saw the phantom of that of his ultimate success, and that was what sealed his fate. Right. That's true. Okay.
From the beginning, when he gave the fate,
but by the plane of that. On what plane is the hatred? That's more important. Quantity of hatred, yes. We could hear Ahasuerus hated Jews more than Haman. On an emotional level, he hated him more. But it's a different plane. What is important is not how much hatred, but how the hatred is expressed, on what level. Is it an intellectual level? Ahasuerus wasn't intellectual, never reached intellectual proportions. That's because he was basically a hedonist. Whereas Haman was really an egotist.
What can
you
do with
that? Okay.
And she says, "Who it is?" He knew who it was.
Right.
Step over there. He couldn't do that. It's like a turning point.
Yeah.
He knew really who it was. I mean, why'd he go through that step? The question and answer.
Right.
She became sort of like a superego didn't define who it was. He needed that last. He couldn't define it. He knew it was. Yeah. He could say that. He could figure it out. He knew who the guy was.
She was keeping quiet for a reason. She wanted to first get a hatred of Benjamin. Yeah. She revealed it. It wasn't saying it was coming.
Asher Osa Haman. Well, how did Chavona move in? He said, Gamini Eitzer Osa Haman Lemordechai Asher Dibetov Alamelech. Oh, maybe they saw Haman. That's what he said. Yes, you see clearly that Haman's not interested in the benefit of the king at all. Because he just made this eighth for Mordechai that Dibar Tov HaMelech, who supported the king. The Reyon Melech flew Allah. That was the... and it's simple. Because the Russia is always tied to the physical. And even though he's ideological, but the thing that affects him most is the personal and the physical. And the personal, the hatred against the character of Mordechai was even greater and the hatred against the ideology at that moment. But the rush is always affected by the physical characteristics. He's ideological too, but down deep he really believes in the physical. Because that's why he has to set up, that's why his ideas are not ideas that a person enjoys in reality. The Chacham uncovers an idea. These ideas are totally tied to the instinctual. The instinctual is the modus operandi of the Hamolik. The instinctual. But it's essentially instinctual, but it uses, in order, in the service of the instincts, it uses the higher elements of man. It uses the higher elements of man in the service of the instincts. But what gets him crazy is the instinctual. On the instinctual plane, that's what gets him crazy. That's why when he saw Mordechai or Kongol Azar unaffected, that got him completely crazy. Because that was hitting the instinctual source.
He
didn't have an ideological hatred of Jew. He realized, on the contrary, that he was in big danger with these other kind of things.
And he realized that the Jew was really supporting him, was really saying, really helped him. And not only that, but Mordechai, of course, when he once he became in the Beit HaMelech, he brought in great wealth. He was a great financier, brought in great wealth to Achashverosh. Vayechon Melech Achashverosh Mas, he was able to levy taxes. It was prosperity. It was just like Don Isaac Abarbanel and Ferdinand years later in Spain. Same kind of thing. Who made Spain? The Jews made Spain. If they expelled the Jews, the whole country collapsed economically. So Mordechai, they secured Achashverosh by the wealth, by the fact that he's safe, and he realized these things. So his emotion wasn't on an ideological plane, so he can convert. He's basically a big Baltaiva, so he was happy.
Whoever goes.
Yeah, he was happy to get rid of the fears and the nightmares, and everybody says it was better off. So he overcame his hatred. A Russian like that can overcome. Yes. Yes, and he's Paz Yosef. Okay. The difference again, Achashverosh also was a Baal Gaiva. You ask me, say, Achashverosh wasn't a Baal Gaiva? Of course he was a Baal Gaiva. You see the fact that what? That he wanted Vashti HaMalka to show Laharos as Yachya, and Laharos to show the whole thing was to show how great he was, the whole party. Maybe to show the whole, what was it supposed to say? But the answer is, you see, the hedonist ego is simply tied to his hedonistic pleasure. It's not, he's showing how great he is, he has this, he has that. In Haman, it's not an ego tied to an external object. It's an ego attached to himself, to the self. That's the difference.
This is an Ervin and Dalad, the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk in Kehelas. That Pasuk Kehelas says that Ayelas Ahoven Vialas Fain. And the Pasuk in that Kehelas is our Mishle. And Mishle Hey says that the. So the Gemara says the Yelus Ahav and the Yelus Fain, Da Deho Yiravucha, for Chol Eis. Ba'avosat Tish Gesan. They should constantly be involved in its love, which means they're trying to Talmud Torah, trying to Torah. But the Moshe that it gives is like a female ram, that it's, that Da Deho Yiravucha B'Chol Eis, that its breath should nurture you at all times. So the Gemara says in Erevin that why is Torah like a breast? So the Gemara says, So just like the breast, when the child suckles the mother's breast, so the more it presses, the more it gives out milk, so to Divrei Torah, the more one works the Torah, so the more ideas come. So, you see, in Talmud Torah is something which is really an unpredictable kind of thing. We never get finished with it. So, I want to add a couple of points to what we said last week, because I was thinking about it, and a couple of more points became clear to me. The two points are psychological points, the last is a philosophical. The first point I want to mention is that it's interesting that Medrash that we were dealing with, The Medrash that says that Lassos Kirtzon Ish for Ish, when he made this tremendous party, so it says that his purpose was to act in accordance with the will of Ish for Ish, each man. So Chazal say, what is each man? So they say there were two men that were there that were important. One was Haman and one was Mordechai. And we explain the reason is because they were both cerebral individuals. That Haman represented a highly developed, sophisticated personality, and in opposition to him, Mordechai was also a sophisticated personality. The difference, of course, was that Haman's sophistication was a sophistication of his mind, but his mind was in the service of his instincts. His mind was in the service of his instincts. And we explained that that's really what Amalek is. Amalek is an intellectual personality, but his intellect is in the service of his instinctual emotions, and the main emotion that's behind it is the egotistic. That's Amalek. That's Nazi Germany, that's Hitler, Yamach Shalom. And in opposition to this, there is the mind in the service of the soul, in the service of the pursuit of knowledge. That's the Jew. That's Mordechai. So that's what the Medrash is doing. It's placing these two personalities in juxtaposition to each other. Both sophisticated people. Both are removed from the baser instincts. Okay, but there's something else in the matter that occurred to me after I was thinking about it. So what does it mean this Pasuk is saying, really? What does the Pasuk say? Pasuk says that his whole method in making this big party, this extravagance, was Lasos Kitzonis Reish. So it says the two people. One person was Mordechai and one person was Haman. Jesus HaShverosh was impressed with both of them. He was impressed with both of them. He realized that these are not ordinary people. Both of them are not ordinary people. He wasn't into which one's a Russian, which one's a Tzaddik, but he noticed that there's some unusual quality that these two people have. And they're important people insofar as his regime, as far as his Malchus, his kingdom is concerned. Now, but the Pasuk has to make sense. When Chazal and the Medrash, we have a Medrash, the Medrash has to make sense on all planes. And we have to understand Pshuto Shel Mikra. So, but Lasos Kitzon Ishvish doesn't seem to mean Mordechai and Haman. Lasos Kitzon Ishvish seems to mean that he made the party in a way that everybody's happy, wanted to satisfy everybody. That's the blame shadow pasuk. Mm-hmm. So how could Chazal take this pasuk out of its context and say Ishvish means Haman and Mordechai? There were hundreds and hundreds of people at the party. It was a party, an extended party, extended extravagance for months. So Yomim Rabbi Shmona Mas Yom, half a year. So what is the what was the? How can you say these two people? It's an interesting psychological phenomenon. Chazal was saying, yes.
That psychological.
Mordechai, Holat Gadol. That's right, because they both represent a sophistication. Correct, but if they're in juxtaposition, one is evil, and one represents the height of man. Okay. But the question still is, how do you interpret the plain shot in the pasuk? An interesting observation. Chazal has to make sense in terms of the plain shot in the mikra. So how do you understand? Yes? He looked at them as great people. He saw their unusual qualities. These are unusual. They stood out. Haman and Mordechai stood out in Achashverosh's mind. So these are unusual people. These are people that I have to, are important people that I have to deal with. These are the main people. And what does it show you? It shows you an interesting thing. It's a psychological thing. It shows you that a person can make a party for hundreds of people, and in the back of his mind, he really wants to impress one person or two people. That's what it shows. Interesting psychological observation. It means to say that people don't really look into their motivations deeply. But the truth of the matter is, that's the way it is. That the whole party that he made, all these hundreds of people, in the back of his mind, who was he concerned about that they should be impressed? It was these two individuals, Haman and Mordechai. Psychological phenomenon. Okay, I thought I'd mention it. Now, because I don't like to leave the Chazal without a complete interpretation. All right. There's one more thing I want to. Another thing I want to explain on another psychological point is. Question that Rabbi Mann raised was, all right, we know how Esther plotted to bring Ahasuerus to that situation where he condemned Haman. And Rabbi Mann asked me last week, What does it mean suddenly when Esther said there's somebody that wants to destroy me and my nation? So there was someone who wants to destroy me and my nation. So what was Achashverosh's response? Okay. So Rana said, what is the significance of this outburst on the part of Achashverosh? So actually, I was thinking about it. When you look into it, it is really a crazy statement. What do you mean, Achashverosh himself was the one. Vayosa melech tabato. And he offered money. Haman offered money. What did Achashverosh say? Kesef nasulach. Ram lasas bo katov veinecha. So he was really the one that was the most evil in terms of the situation, in terms of the effectiveness of the situation of bringing about the chalul and the destruction of the Jews. Achashverosh was the one. What do you mean? Who's there? He wasn't stupid. He knew a short while ago he just was the one that was instrumental, and his hatred for the Jews was greater, as was mentioned last week, was greater on an emotional plane. His hatred was greater than Haman. Okay, so what's the answer? It was an absurd remark. What's the answer? Yes.
I just want to say politicians
really cheat from what we see from the Megillah. Of course, you have to understand, like the Ramban says, and it's obvious in the Chumash. But the Torah and the Ksuvim, the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, do not really tell you the entire, exactly every bit of the conversation. They just tell you the main point. And the main idea that went on, the main conversation, they don't tell you every single word in the conversation. Could have been, there's probably much more there. And for sure, there was much more there than the Pasuk described. But really, Esther HaMalka used three psychological mechanisms in bringing about the change in Achashverosh. They were all through an essay. First mechanism she used was, as I mentioned last week, was fantasy. The first time she didn't say what she wanted. She made the first party, and then she allowed him to think overnight. His imagination was instrumental in changing and bringing about the fears. He couldn't sleep, the fears that he had. So that was the first mechanism that she used. She knew that the imagination, the fantasy, is more powerful than any reality. And she allowed him to fantasize, and that's how she really primed him for the situation. That's one mechanism she used. The second mechanism she used was an important principle. That principle is that indirect suggestion is far, far more effective than direct suggestion. It's an important principle. First wants to use this principle. Avail himself of another area. General. Why is that so? Because the fact is that whenever you offer a direct suggestion, there's always a resistance factor on the part of the person that's taking the suggestion. Because a person by nature doesn't like to take a suggestion from somebody else. It's automatically a put down. You're listening to me. So that's why it's far more effective to place a suggestion indirectly, so that the person himself picks up on it, because then they think it's their own idea. And that's why it's much more effective. Mm-hmm. That was the second method that she used. When did she use that method? When she said, what kind of a statement? Why say such a thing? She said, because if it was only sold for slaves and maidservants, I would have kept quiet, because it's not worth it. That's not worthwhile enough to disturb the king. Okay? So what did she mean? Over there, she wanted to demonstrate that Haman is not really interested in the benefit of Achashverosh. Because if that was the case, so from an economic standpoint, it would have been better to enslave the Jews. But he was really trying, he was involved in an ideology, which was his own agenda. And he wanted to become an ideological leader, which would take away power eventually from Achashverosh. But she didn't say it openly, because an open suggestion doesn't carry as much efficacy. So therefore, what did she do? She sort of in her statement, she included it, even to allow him to realize that this man, let him pick it up on his own. Let him think of it as his own idea. Then it'll be more effective. That's the second psychological principle that she used. The third one perhaps the most important one was that she was able to make her request in a way that Ahasuerus would never think that she thinks that he is in any way responsible. Because if he thought for a moment that she actually thought that she considered him to be involved, that would have been the end of it. Then it would have been a total condemnation. So she had to present it in a way that he felt secure that she in no way thinks that he really is responsible. And that was his reaction. He acted completely ignorant. Who is it? Who is it that came up with this idea? I had nothing to do with it. So the third, that was probably the most important psychological principle that she used. That if you're trying to influence a person to do something, you must make sure that you remove from that person any kind of guilt attached to it, any kind of condemnation. Because if there's condemnation, then you lost the person. A person that's not perfected, the slightest condemnation, he's gone because he can't tolerate it. So she presented it skillfully in a way that he never imagined that she thought that she's condemning him. That was the perfect reaction. Who is it that who could it be that did this? I had nothing to do with it. It was Haman Haraza. That's it. Yes. You have to look into the Megillah. See, the three principles that she used in order to bring about the He that did this, I had nothing to do with it. It was Haman Haraza. Yes. You have to look into the Megillah. See, the three principles that she used in order to bring about the it says that it's a matter of dictum. It says, so he went out to the garden. He had to cool off. V'homon omad levakesh al nafsho me'efter amarko. It says, v'homon omad, in the past tense. V'homon omad, he got up to beg for his life from Esther amarko. Because he saw it was complete. And the only chance he had was to appeal to the sympathies of Esther. Okay? Next pasuk it says, V'amelech shav meginas abisna beis mishtayayim, and the king returned. It says, V'homan no fail al amito asher Esther olal. What did it say? Always bothered me. I'm a Balkaris. I learned in the Gilles. I was going to have to remember. Omad is the first one is in the past. But the second one, he attempted to say, V'homan nofal alamita asher Esther olal. Why did it switch it from the past of Omad? Because it's telling you historically what happens. So it should be in the past. But then V'homan doesn't say, V'homan nofal alamita. V'homan nofal alamita. Why is it no fail in the present? Why did it switch to the present form of the verb? What's the answer? And the answer is, so we mentioned last week that the deadly error he committed was that he went on a bed. That showed that he has no respect for the queen. There's supposed to be a distance between the queen and between a stranger. After all, the queen belongs to the king. And he lost a sense of propriety and he fell on the bed. But what it means is, you see, he wasn't completely foolish. He wasn't completely foolish. Haman is describing an event that he didn't completely lose his senses. Why? Because he did it when the king went out. You see? He would never have done it if the king would not have gone out. So you see here the intricacies, the exactness of the Ashgacha. The Ashgacha was that the king should walk out. He went out to the garden. Then, he was in the process because the king went out. That's why he took the liberty, because he wasn't there. He never would have done it in the presence of the king. You see? But when the king came back, what did he saw? What did he see? He saw that Haman is in the Haman no fail alamita. He was in the process because he had done it before when the king left. He didn't imagine the king would return so quickly.
You see, if the king would stay there the entire time, he never would have gone. So Haman, if he would have said, well, Haman, not foul, it would imply that the king came back and Haman fell on the bed. He wouldn't have done it. And what sealed his fate was a gam lichboshes hamalka imi babayis. So part of the Ashkocha was that Ahasuerus should walk out into the garden because of his anger. If he didn't walk out, his fate would not have been sealed. It's an interesting point that you could derive just from the form of the verb. The first one is in the past, Amad. The second one is no fail in the present. Yes?
At the point at which Esther and...
further the emotion is driven home, that is that's the security of the... that gives you all security of his decision process. So Agam Lichbosh and Malkin of the boy, that was it. That sealed it. And it was only because Ahasuerus walked out. An interesting thing. Megillah points out every nuance of the Ashtar.
Ahasuerus
was not an objective, cool figure. He wasn't stupid. He was Noah. He could have been stupid. But the emotions played a powerful role in his life. And that's why Shadow was an emotion. Yes. Agam lichbosh the malka was because before he started with the crown, and then he withdrew. And it's Agam lichbosh the malka, yes, is that he made the connection between the two. That's excellent. Very good. Made the connection between his originally wanted to give the crown, and then he saw he backed off. He saw Ahasuerus' face, so he wasn't too happy about that. So he backed off. Like Rashi says, oh, we won't use the crown, you know. But Agam lichbosh the malka in Vapoyas brought back his original intention. Very good. Yeah. It's a kind of quarrel. That it means like Donnie said, Lada Marche Levu Mele Kinman Eloshim. It means that this was Ashgacha. Adam Yetzin Kriya Melech, Afnei Haman Chafu. His fate was sealed by that moment that Ahasuerus left alone. Okay, yeah. Tersu Echsav is not simply a vehicle of communication. Tersu Echsav is really a phenomenon. Tarash B'Chsav is a phenomenon. You have to study Tarash B'Chsav just like a scientist would study the phenomena of the universe. It's a phenomenon. Okay. There's one more thing I want to bring up. And that is, we mentioned last week, we said that there were two hatreds that Haman had towards Mordechai. One was an ideological hate. That was the first hatred. That's when he heard that Mordechai didn't bow down to him. Why? Because he's a Jew, and he was claiming that this is not merely showing respect to a person, but this was really embracing an ideology. And then he lost, I'm Mordechai. So there was an ideological hate towards the Jew. But then later, after that, subsequently, what happened was that he saw that Mordechai lo kom velo zor. He didn't get up, and he wasn't moved by him at all. Vayimalei homon al Mordechai. There was a personal hatred towards the character of the Jew. The two hatreds that the Jew experiences. That's why you see, there's nothing to do with anti-Semitism and Nazism, had nothing to do with the ideology. Not nothing to do, only in an indirect sense. I mean, it had to do, I explained it last week. But I mean to say, a person who gave up the ideology of Judaism was not saved. Why? Because the character of the Jew became the object of the hate of the Nazis. And even though a person was not religious, had nothing to do with Judaism, but the character of the Jew can't be obliterated, cannot be obliterated, and the hatred will express itself as the character and personality of the Jew. That was why Yimolei Haman al Mordechai. What? What aspect of the character of the Jew is v'lo kom v'lo zah? That the Jew is not impressed. The Jew is never impressed by the Goyim, no matter how much he suffers because of the hatred, but there's something in him that gives him the strength and the ability to simply laugh off the guy. Underneath it all, he's laughing at the guy. And the guy knows. As a matter of fact, I remember an article many years ago in Time magazine where they translated the Jewish song of Shikr is a God. Shikr is a God. Shikr is a Pinkim is a Vala is a God. Which means that the translator of the song says a guy is a drunkard, and they translated it correctly. Came out sound a little funny in English. Drunk he is, drink he must, because he is a Gentile.
Play well.
So the what?
It's a matter of anti-Semitism. But of course, people, some generous guy said, "Look, what do you expect? You take a people and you try to destroy them and mistreat them and torture them throughout the centuries, so they make up a little song. So that's why that gives you right." Of course, the whole thing is crazy, but the fact is, why is it so important to the guy? Really, why is the guy? Because the guy knows that that's true. He knows that no matter what he does, the Jew just simply doesn't below come below zah. He doesn't notice. That's why, as I mentioned before, Professor Wolfson of the university speaks about how the goyim would herd the Jews into the churches and have the ministers preach there all day for hours and hours. Jew walked up. Impressed by the goyim. To my mind, what causes the greatest impression? Okay. Yeah. You see. Like a Jew, before he go to Bethlehem, says, "Excuse me, I have to go see the park." Common expression. I one time got in trouble with that. I got used to the habit doing it. My uncle always said that. I got into the habit of doing that. Then I was in the university. I was talking with Guyan, and in the middle, I excused myself. Pasuk actually describes it exactly. And that's the character of the Jew. Below calm, below soft. He's unimpressed. Even a Jew that's gone away from the others from Yiddishkeit still has that character. Still has that character. Yeah. The head of the B'nai Noach movement, he said that he was always taught, and he became a minister after all, and he said that... That started him to think into Yadis. That caused him to begin to think about. Yeah. Yes. The Rabbi may ame ha'aretz mitziyadim. Why? Ki nofal pachar ha'yehudim alayim. Because the fear of the Jew fell upon him. What is the fear of the Jew? The fear of the Jew that I mentioned last week. I said behind anti-Semitism is a tremendous fear. And as a matter of fact, the Yadis maintains that the lowly position of the Jew throughout the centuries, throughout the past millennia, is because of the fact that it's really the negative of the true position of the Jew. Because the true position of the Jew is as an individual or as a group that inspires fear, that inspires fear. And what happened was, the moment the Jews rose, it was a return to their rightful position. And that's the position of the Jew, Rimos HaMashiach. The reason why the Jew is so downtrodden is not simply that he's downtrodden. It's because he's deserving of their true position, and the world recognizes it, that's why they have to push him down. It's the opposite side of the cause can be expressed in two ways. It can be expressed in his rightful way. That's when the Jew lives according to the Torah. If he doesn't live according to the Torah, it's going to be expressed in the negative. The low position of the Jew throughout the centuries is the negative of his true position. Okay? It's like Sigmund Freud said, that the Jew, 3,000 years ago, the Jew said he's a chosen people, and the world acted as if they believed him ever since. Which means to say, you should have gone a little deeper. Should have gone a little deep. I was just talking from the superficial psychological aspect. From a Torah point of view, it means to say that they know what the true position of the Jew is, and they fear the Jew, and that's what causes the downtroddenness of the Jew. It's the negative of the reality. The negative of the reality. The Mizar Yehudim. Nafal people are harmed. And that's what the Torah says. But take a look further. In the test, what does it say? It says, Kigodol Mordechai v'beis ha'melech, v'shomo holech b'chol ha'medinos. He was great in the house of the king, and his fame went throughout all the medinos, throughout all the countries. Kiyoish Mordechai holech v'godol. What's that? Kiyoish Mordechai holech v'godol. The man Mordechai was growing ever greater, becoming ever greater. What does it mean? It means to say it's different than Pachar Yehudim Alayim. What's the difference? Godol Mordechai is the character of the Jew, the personality of the Jew. just like the two hatreds that Haman had against Mordechai. Haman had against Mordechai. One was the ideological hate. That was Am Mordechai. He didn't know Am Mordechai. That was Kinafal Tachar Yehudim Alayim. That was when they returned to their restored to their rightful position. So then it was Kinafal Tachar Yehudim Alayim. And in the same manner, just like Velo Kom Velo Zomi Menu, there was hatred against the personality of Mordechai. On the contrary, when his true position was restored, it was Ki Godo Mordechai Beveis HaMelech, Ki Yoish Mordechai Holech Begodo. Because the personality of Mordechai, the character of the Jew, was raised to the highest esteem. Both things are met. When you look into it later, you see that both things are mentioned. So Meir pointed this out to me. That it's carried through, both things are carried through exactly the way originally was in the negative, and was restored to the negative, carries it out precisely. Where does this come from, really? I mean, it's a yisod against the personality. And then on the contrary, the esteem of the Jew, because of his ideology, and the esteem of the Jew because of his personality, because of his character. It's
character.
Yeah, it's sure. So yeah, it says over there, it says Ki'isha by Moshe also. But it's a pasuk in the Torah. It says in Moshe, Godol Moshe,
Gamish
Moshe Godol Moshe,
Ve'eni Ad Eparo,
Ve'eni, it's right. Yeah, that's the personality of Moshe, the character of Moshe. That's what they saw. Correct. But it's a pasuk in the Torah. It's a pasuk in Dvar. Pasuk in Dvar and Kisavah. The pasuk says, in the Brachas. In the Brachas of Kisavah, the pasuk says, and there's a chazal, a strange chazal that I never understood until now. It says like this. It says, the pasuk, it's in Shishi. It's in Dvarim Chavches, Yud. V'ro kol amei ha'aretz kishem ad Hashem nikra olecho v'yoru minecho. It says that the nations of the world will see that the name of God is called upon you, and they will fear you. V'yoru minecho. They will fear you. But what does Chazal say? Chazal say, yeah, amar v'lazar gadol. Now what does it mean, kishem Hashem nikra olecho? Elu tefillin shebarosh. It's referring to the tefillin that a person wears on his head. What does I never understood? What does Chazal mean that it refers to the Tzvon Shavarosh? What does it mean that a person will say, God will see a Jew with a tefillin on his head and they're going to become frightened? What does it mean? What does it mean? It means to say like this. The Pasuk says, V'ro chol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra lecha v'yoru minecho, is referring to the people. It's referring, because the Pasuk is referring to the people. Referring to the people. Which means the character of the people will be known. And they'll fear them. Plain shot in the pasuk. They'll be afraid of them. You know, it says the pasuk says that the pasuk says Yitein Hashem Sevecha Kum Olechol Nidrochim Ufanecha. The Derech Echad Yitzu Olechol V'Shiva Drochim Nusufa. They'll be afraid of you as a nation. Okay, so that's one. But Chazal say Eilu Tefillin Shebarosh. It means there's a deeper level. It means the ideological recognition. That's Tzvon Shavarosh. What's Tzvon Shavarosh? Tzvon Shavarosh means the ideas of the parshias of the parshias of Tzvon, of Shema, of Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that we were given the true ideas concerning God, and that these ideas we put on the Rosh, like put on the Rosh, to show them that they're a part of our intellectual makeup of the Chachma of the Jew. And because of that, the Goyim will be inspired with fear. The fear will be generated from the ideology of the Jew. So it's really on two planes. That's what Chazal means. Eilu Tefillin Shebarosh means that the Yoru Minecho will be because of two things. The flame shot in the pasuk is because of the character of the Jew. That's the flame shot. But behind it is the Tefillin Shebarosh. That's what Chazal, that's what Rabbi Elazar Gadol says. Eilu Tefillin Shebarosh. Yes.
Hitler in Mein Kampf says that the reason he hates the Jews is because they gave us the Ten Commandments, which means a form of conscience.
Right.
He says he would rather be a tooth and pagan and not have any restraints. And right. That's why he hates the Jews.
Yeah, that's correct. Because of the ethics and the morality. And he was basically filled with a tremendous fear of the Jews. As you see, it's a universal conspiracy and the unbelievable power that he projected onto the Jew. It's amazing. It shows you the tremendous fear
that he had in Rosh. But that's the pasuk.
So it's a pasuk in the Torah.
Yes.
In the same way with Ha'ish, it says, Right.
It's his persona.
It's his persona. It's
persona.
So Rashi says that it's better.
They said, Devil Pardosov shall use like for a Kaspo, who's a Havo Shalom.
Personality,
but versus the other ego, he was the other ego ideal, Zavi Mela, so Catherine Zuff, right. Was even greater.
But behind the personality is the ideals.
Okay. All right, that's it. Okay.